Welcome to the Exoverland Podcast. At Exoverland, we're committed to living a life of adventure and to sharing what we learn in the hopes of inspiring and empowering others to boldly explore the world. Join the conversation as we sit down to share stories of overland travel and vehicle-based adventure with a broad range of compelling guests from around the globe. Find your next adventure with OnX Off-Road, the ultimate off-road navigation tool. OnX has been a longtime partner, and they are getting ready for a pretty exciting map update. It's improved trail discovery by difficulty. Green equals easy, blue, moderate, black, difficult, and red for the brave ones. Pairing this with offline maps and private land data, this is the ultimate tool that fits right in your pocket. Download OnX Off-Road today and use code XOVERLAND20 to save 20% off your yearly membership.
Welcome back to the XOVERLAND podcast. Jimmy and I are sitting down this week to talk with Ashley and Richard Giordano of Dust to Glory. They are one of our newest or latest creators of the Creator Series that you can learn more about. There's actually a YouTube video that went live this week from Exoverland that talks all about the Creator Series and has a little snippet about Richard and Ashley and what they're doing and their Tundra that they shipped overseas recently and how they live full-time internationally traveling. They're an amazing couple. But part of the reason that we wanted to have them on is because they were a part of the Apex Series with Clay and Rochelle and the Crofts in Africa. So, yeah.
I'm stoked to have them on in this context, Leah. They were, you know, Richard and Ashley were two of the first people I ever podcasted with, starting the Exoverland podcast. And man, there's so much that's happened since then. And you and I are teamed up, and to have those two on the podcast with us, fresh off their Africa experience, mm-hmm. I can't wait.
Yeah. So, and they actually are in Montana right now and got to sit in front of Jimmy while this recording is going on, and the visiting. I'm not even sure where they flew in from, actually.
You know, with these overlanders, I'm never quite sure where everybody's coming in from. Like, did they drive in? Did they fly in? How did they get here?
So, yeah, a little bit of backstory about Richard and Ashley. Ashley is an overland journalist. That is what she does full time. You can find her on the Overland Journal podcast. And lots of writing. She does a ton of reading and writing and publications related to overlanding. And Richard is behind the camera for Exoverland and an incredible photographer and filmmaker.
And Ashley, I'm hoping we can get her on for a specific episode about her work as an overland journalist. Awesome. Well, with no further ado, I think we should jump into this conversation with Richard and Ashley about Africa. Richard, Ashley, welcome back on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Nice to be back.
It's nice to see you guys again. I mean, I was just thinking when you walked in the door, I was like, God, you know, all the places and everything you all have done since I was like last in your physical presence. I don't even know where to begin.
Yeah, it's been at least a year, right? I think it was last January we saw you, probably around this time.
Yeah, probably, which is kind of crazy for me too, because it's like, oh, wait a minute, that was a year in my life also. That was fast.
We really realized it because all of the Great British Baking Show new seasons started, or one new season is on Netflix right now, and so we could like figure out what the timing was of our lives based on that. So that's been fun to watch.
I do love how with Starlink, you know, you could be on the far side of the moon, right, and still fire up your favorite show.
Yeah. Exactly. And we can see every one of your podcasts coming in week after week after week after week. I'm like, I don't know how you guys are doing it because it's a lot of work, a lot of chatting.
It's been a hustle. It's
Did you hear
hustle.
That, Leah? That's definitely making me feel good about our work this year.
I love it. Yes. We've been hustling and shoveling it all over their way.
It is impressive.
New stuff.
That's awesome. Thank you for the compliment, both of you.
Of course.
Well, and all the more reason I'm just stoked to have you guys back on the podcast. Because there's so much to get into here. And, you know, most of our listeners have probably heard you on the podcast before, but hopefully we picked up a lot of new people even since the last time you were on. So a Reader's Digest version of who you two are. We won't go into the weeds too far because we got something bigger to talk about today that involves your recent traveling experience. But yeah, let's let the audience know for anybody new to who you guys, like who you are, what you do, where you came from.
Do you want to take this one?
I like how we both look at each other. Sure.
You want to talk? Do you
want to? Yeah. So yeah, we're Richard and Ashley Giordano, and we're from Canada. And in 2013, we drove our 1990 Toyota pickup down to South America, and that kind of started the ball rolling in the whole overland space and overland sphere and all the overlandy things in life. And yeah, we started working with X Overland a few years after that.
After I got invited to go on the South America trip, and I said, no, I have to like focus on my engineering career. I didn't think it was the right thing to do, but ever since saying no to Clay and Jeff at the time that I couldn't come to South America and photograph it with them, I regretted it. So the next time they invited us to do something, I said yes.
Yeah, so we did the Arctic Solo series where we drove up to Tuktoyaktuk, which is on the Arctic Ocean, quite far north in Canada, with the, what was the...
Meridian
X3. Meridian, yeah. Meridian Tacoma. X3.
Yeah, X3 Meridian. Yeah.
We've driven a few Toyotas, or a few Tacomas since then. So, yeah. And then we were on the Great Pursuit and Nordic
and
series.
A couple Overlander episodes. Yeah. And then Africa.
And that's what we're here to talk about today. So, wow. Let's open that box, shall we?
Let's do it.
Okay.
It's been closed for a few months now. So.
I'm going to let Leah propose the first question to you two. We were doing a little brainstorming sesh not long ago and having a lot of fun just thinking about the things we wanted to ask you two. So, Leah, I'm going to let you do the honors here. Jump in with the first question.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so I think my first question is your roles on the expedition and what those look like for both of you. So if you want to take turns going through those things, because I think I was talking to Jimmy earlier about like how for a lot of us, when we go overlanding, we go on these excursions or whatever, it's more of a vacation. And I feel like there's a defining line here that this is not that for you guys on these particular types of trips. So if you could define that for our audience, I think that'd be a great place to start.
All right. Well, I will start off by saying that we're already talking about the next trip. And we had a conversation the other night with somebody who maybe coming on the trip, who's never been on one before. And he asked, oh, like how much of the trip is work versus downtime? And both Clay and I looked at each other and just laughed because there is no downtime. It is 60 days straight of waking up early and going to bed late. And it is so fulfilling and so much work and so tiring and so not a vacation, I guess that's what we'll start with. But my role on this expedition has been similar to all the rest of them. Lead photographer. I was lead cam op and DIT as well. So I was doing all the data management at the end of the night, offloading gigabytes of footage, hundreds of gigabytes of footage each
What's
night.
What's DIT?
Data.
Thank you, Ashley. I was wondering the same.
I would have said it if I knew. It is. It's like data something tech, data info tech. I don't know. Okay. But essentially, I'm just offloading all the footage and all the photos that we shot each day.
I think I'm seeing why you love coffee so much, Richard. You kind of live on coffee.
It's kind
don't
of
stop.
I sort of need it, but I also sort of absolutely love the taste.
Yeah, that's perfect.
So, yeah, it's great. But yeah, so most of my day is filled with waking up early and starting the coffee. Then everybody else wakes up and we start shooting some stills and filming. Most of my stills are used in-house for XO, but also they get distributed to the sponsors as well. So usually have a long list of deliverables and photo requests and photo briefs from sponsors. And constantly just having all of that in mind as we continue on with the entire trip, as well as filming the entire story. And then we end up at the end of the day, usually I will hand off the filming duties for the evening to somebody else. In this case, it was Peter. And I will be in one of the trucks, in the back of the truck, just offloading 9 microphones, 3 GoPros, 2 drones, sometimes 3 drones, and 2 cameras. So lots of stuff to offload and then back up 3 times and split those hard drives between the 3 trucks. And then everybody goes to sleep and then I go to sleep.
You know, you complimented us when we started this podcast, Richard, on our podcasting and wow, how are you guys keeping up and, you know, having that many conversations? All of a sudden, it doesn't seem like a lot of work.
Well,
no, yeah, right back at you.
I didn't do very much for the next couple months after that trip.
Okay. Took a little breather.
Yeah. But also I don't think that you had any rest on this trip either.
Yeah. Ashley, what was your role?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So I was navigator. I also did, I guess, most of the planning of route planning. So where we were going, where we were staying, I had a lot of help with that. Thankfully, we had some locals on the ground and also some colleagues and friends of mine that I reached out to for suggestions of places to stay, certain routes to do. Things like that. So I orchestrated all the organization and planning for that. I helped with cooking and I drove and what else? Was that it? I'm like trying to remember now, but yeah, it was pretty busy for me as well.
When you guys go with the team, do you get a list of roles like, okay, you know, you're signing on with us, we're doing this, and here are your roles? Is that spelled out and defined?
Mm-hmm. Like to a certain extent.
Yeah, I think the thing about these trips is that, because I'm like, do we get that? I think we do, but then you just do what you need to do to be able to make the trip happen. Mm-hmm. So maybe things aren't spelled out, but you see a need and you just go do it because that's what needs to be done for it all to work out and mm-hmm. to move forward.
In my contract, it was spelled out. I don't
know. I'm sure it was in mine too, but.
But I hear you, Ashley. Like what I hear you saying, it's like, yes, these things are spelled out, but then everyone on the team, I'm guessing, has an overarching view of the mission, so to speak.
And 100%.
What, right? So you have these things that are lined out, but then you're always looking to help in whatever way you can to just keep things rolling.
Yeah. And I think the main thing is that like nobody's too big for a small job.
Yeah.
It's all got to get done.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there, that really strikes me too about the awareness that team members have to have. It's like situational awareness of like what needs to be done, what's sitting over there that could be a quick this or that, right? And just everybody has to be present that way, I would think.
Yeah,
absolutely. Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. So here's my next follow-up question, Leah, to what your question was.
Go for it.
And we'll start with Richard.
Okay.
In your many roles, Richard, mm-hmm. what did you find to be your greatest challenges on this expedition? Like being this is Africa, it's not Scandinavia, very different environments. You've been on some other XO expeditions mm-hmm. you were mentioning at the beginning of the podcast. Being in Africa, what did that look like as far as your greatest challenges and what you do?
There were a few challenges. I think the first challenge compared to the Nordic series is we had a significantly shorter day that we were working in because the sun was rising late and going and setting early.
This was winter in Southern Africa. Yep.
So compared to the summer in Scandinavia, you know, we're like 4 or 5 hours less in a day to do work. And it meant that when photographing or filming in golden hour, it was only an hour as opposed to in the Nordic where it was 3 hours long, just beautiful light that's lasting forever. So that was one thing. I think managing camera gear in trucks that are just rattling themselves apart. I had a top handle fall off a FX3 that was tight, but just vibrated so much. It just came off. So trying to manage all that gear to make sure that it lasted for 60 days of abuse. That was a big one. Lots of dust, lots of dirt, the normal stuff.
And dude, I saw like, I've been working with the story a little bit, right? Yeah. With narrations and this and that. And man, the dust, like I feel like that's a motif throughout the whole story. It's like, we need a metaphor there with the dust because mm-hmm. it just permeated everything that I could see.
Yeah.
Especially Peter Van Straelen. that man looks like some, you know, what do they call him? The swashbuckling, like African, you know, like the archetype of that by the time he was at episode 3 or 4.
Yeah. It didn't help that the air conditioner on the Tacoma, had an issue. So we were running around with two windows down, 40 mile an hour air conditioning happening and just dust and dirt just coming straight on in.
That's miserable.
It wasn't the best.
Well, you know, I mean, Clay Clay is working around a theme for this because he's been candid about the challenges. And there's a book of this title, and it's one of the Stoic philosophers, basically. And the idea is the obstacle is the way. Mm. And he was just saying, like, at some point it hit him. It's like, okay, we had all these plans. And as Mike Tyson said, everyone's got a great plan until you're punched in the face. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, we got the punch in the face, and we had to start working through the obstacles. And that became a big part of the expedition. You know, it's just trying to overcome that stuff.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, you know, hearing from you, Richard, it's like your specific obstacles, right? Like for you, it's the short days. It's an incredible amount of dust in technical camera equipment. It's the trucks rattling like crazy. And you're trying to keep this whole production going on a technical level, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Ashley, I do remember seeing some footage with you navigating and trying to lead the whole team and like, we're going to camp here and figuring this stuff out. I mean, Leah and I were talking about this before the podcast, just like trying to put ourselves in Africa and wondering like, what would we even be using? Paper maps, Garmins, like how did you do it?
Yeah. So I used a little bit of everything. So I used paper maps, local to the area, Tracks for Africa, I believe the paper maps were called, and they had the routes broken down for distances, so it would list specific distances between points and how many kilometers it would be, but also they gave a time estimate that was realistic ish yeah. I used those. I did use Google Maps for some sections as well, like on pavement and stuff. It was pretty accurate. I used some mapping apps. I also started calculating our own times based on averages. Yeah. So our own average would change. So I was just starting to apply like this average time to the terrain to see if it was accurate, and it usually was.
You're like a human Google Maps.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. That's so smart.
Ashley, I'm curious, how much time would you spend planning before the trip even started versus how much were you doing like while you were there?
So I think I spent maybe 3 or 4 weeks semi-casually planning before the trip. And then when we were in Johannesburg, we had a base there, and it was pretty intense before we left. I had to reschedule a whole bunch of things, which people will learn more about that when the series comes out. So we had a little more time. So I was kind of like altering the plan every single day for what, 10 days or something, just based on new time constraints.
Yeah, for sure.
And then on the actual trip while we were going along, it was a little bit less, but I was still calculating almost every night to try to get the next day's numbers as accurate as possible. So yeah.
God, that is for me, Leah, like just a revelation, what Ashley said about starting to do her own calculating to figure out distances and times. Like that's such a helpful tip if you're, because I think we maybe over rely on tech to calculate that for us. And we could, starting with the first day, begin to calculate our own pace and just get familiar with that when we're traveling and navigating. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, the terrain varied so much, but fortunately, if we had a few days where it was kind of sort of similar, I would just apply the same-ish numbers and you could see every day how it was changing. Richard was mentioning that the days were short. And so that put a lot of pressure on me because I knew that we had to get a certain amount of kilometers done in a day. First of all, to get there, hopefully before dark, but also on the overall plan because we had deadlines we had to meet. So I was looking like at that specific day, but I was also looking a week ahead. So yeah, it was a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of stress.
So like as a navigator, like, you know, maybe what I'm thinking, Ashley, is that more than what most people think of, like, well, I just need to find a place for us to camp and we're touring through the country or wherever we are. You're also calculating and navigating for film work too, correct? Like, let's be here by the golden hour type of thing.
If we could get somewhere by the golden hour, that would have been pretty sweet.
We did get somewhere.
No, we
about
did.
An
we
hour
did.
Before camp is where we got.
Yeah, so that's what you were talking about. There's a plan, right?
Yeah.
And I love my plans. and we try to make it execute the plan as best as we can. But I had to let the plan go as well. I just had to let it go, and we had to do our best, and yeah.
But you also had to plan hard points with like picking up and dropping off team members, but also with a few different guides that we had for different activities, and you did a lot.
Yeah, it was very busy.
Well, that's a lot. And I'm throwing in there like fuel as well, like knowing where your next fuel stop is going to be and how far you can go. And it's just another added
layer. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. I forgot about that. So it was like, how much fuel do we have left? But how much fuel do we need? Because there were certain sections where we weren't able to get fuel for, I think it was a week or something. Mm-hmm. So we had to be really cognizant of how much fuel we were using and when we were filling up. So I was working with Clay a lot on those numbers, as well as water, filling up water and food. So yeah, it was like, hey, Ashley, when's the next shopping stop? Or when's the next available water? Or, you know, when's the next reliable fuel station? Yeah, it's funny looking back on all of it now.
Well, that's what this podcast is all about, right? Like every time the team goes on expedition, I look forward to having the opportunity to chat with everyone. And it's usually like that, Ashley. It's like, oh, it's the first time I really have a chance to reflect and remember some of this because you guys are going so fast mm-hmm. on all the things. Yeah. So I hope that the podcast can do that for you guys.
For sure.
And so I guess same question back at you, Ashley. You know, you've already mentioned some of your challenges. What were your greatest challenges in Africa as a navigator? And, you know, I'm thinking of listeners who are like maybe thinking of planning a trip to Africa and they're going, what am I going to be dealing with navigating? What, you know, so what were some of those greatest challenges, would you say?
So I would say the navigation difficulties all come as a result of what's going on the ground. And so if somebody was going to ship a vehicle, let's say from the US or Canada or Europe to Africa, just leaving enough time or getting a realistic timeline and then maybe adding a little bit to that is helpful, because if your vehicle arrives later, then that's going to affect everything that you've planned going forward. And also in terms of logistics, like, well, if you get there too early, then it's costing you money. We've seen this before, like that's happened to us when we've shipped internationally. Mm-hmm. Or if you get there too late, it could be that your vehicle is at the port costing you money too. And then that's snowballing, right? And that's not just, I'm not necessarily referencing this trip specifically. It's like an international overlanding thing. So yeah, that's one thing that can affect it. I would also say, so for Botswana in particular, and I guess parts of Namibia, the time of the year was high season. And so
what do you mean by that?
Tourist season.
Okay, in Africa, it's tourist season at
that time in of year? Botswana, and I would say like northern Namibia, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. certain parts of South Africa. And so in Botswana, some of the parks or the community trusts, which were kind of like the national parks here, there are only like 8 campgrounds or 10 campgrounds mm-hmm. in certain areas that are really, really, wow. really popular. And so getting a reservation, it's extremely difficult unless you plan well in advance. So that was one thing that I dealt with, was trying to reserve the best camp spots possible for the number of people we had, the number of trucks in high season, while booking kind of at the last minute.
That sounds like yeah. a challenge. I'm yes. just picturing like around Yellowstone National Park mm-hmm. during high season.
Or Banff, Lake Louise. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was that. And the other complication with Botswana is that it's really difficult to book these places individually, because they're often companies that are bulk booking the camp spots. And so it's actually easier to just pay a little bit of a fee and then have a company book. You give them like a list of dates and a list of camp spots that you want, and you email it in and they'll do it for you. Because a lot of the campsites are organized or run by different groups. And so to do them all individually is a lot more difficult. So yeah, I was working with an agent at a company that was booking the campsites for me, which was very helpful. So,
Is that the something I could put a link to in the show notes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, oh, that sweet. Botswana.
Botswana Footprints was the one that I used. There are a couple more out there, but they did a good job. And she was the agent there was extremely patient with me rebooking and rebooking and rebooking based on our schedule that kept changing.
So, schedule's changing again.
Yeah. Yeah, so all of those things affect navigation, right?
Yeah, for sure. I'm thinking about, you know, how our framework as a brand mm-hmm. is educate and entertain and inspire. And already, like, I've learned so many things. If I'm planning an overlanding trip to Africa, just, you know, sitting down with you guys for 20 minutes so far. And what I heard you saying, Ashley, there, as far as, like, time, if you can give yourself more time shipping vehicles, that sort of thing, right?
Yep. And that applies to driving as well. Like we talked about, things are going to take you longer than you think they will. So just allotting extra time when you're doing your driving estimates. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Leah, you want to follow up to anything there that you heard?
Yeah. So when are you going to be participating in the Bell Rally?
I keep hearing that.
I didn't know that she hadn't. I thought she had at some point. I don't know why I didn't know that.
Yeah, I guess I have to train though. So I don't know.
I think it sounds like you've got plenty of skills in your pocket.
next time we'll do the XO trip with a map and compass.
Yes, yeah. That's what I would do, like the XO challenge.
I'm getting excited to film all of this.
Yeah.
All of the holding up of the compass. And you can tell I don't know. I also don't know what it is. I'm like holding up the compass.
Out at night looking at the stars.
Yeah.
I see, like, you and Ashley in a car in the Rebel, Leah. That's what I'm seeing.
Oh,
that would be fun. Uh-huh. I'm into it.
Yeah, that's it. We threw it down mm-hmm. here. It's a possibility now. It's on air.
Yeah, the partnership's pretty important. So if you're pretty laid back, I think I'm not. So maybe we'd make a good team of yin and yang.
Oh, did you say I was pretty laid back?
You seem pretty laid back.
Oh, that's what I want people to think.
Well, that's kind of a fun one to look at, actually, as far as Africa goes and navigating, Ashley. Like, was that a challenge for you, like being driven, type A is what, right, you're saying, and Africa being Africa? Mm-hmm. Was there a clash there? Like, did you have to, you know, accommodate that or, you know, work with yourself in certain ways? Because I feel like a lot of Americans, we are that kind of mindset. But then we show up in less developed countries and struggle with that. So, like, how did you work with that? What could you tell listeners?
Oh boy, yeah, it was a big internal struggle. And looking back now, I learned so much from the experience. And one thing I learned was that I wish that I could have just relaxed a little bit and enjoyed it. You know, like Rochelle, we were talking about this last night, and she's like, "We're not like trying to fly rocket ships or." Cure yeah. cancer here. We're just trying to like get somewhere and film some stuff, you know? Yeah. So I wish that I could have maybe enjoyed a bit more, but I was really worried about everything. And also we've talked about this before, Richard and I, about how you're like so in the moment and you're so focused on doing the best job that you can, that sometimes you don't understand why you're feeling the way that you're feeling because you're just like in this kind of zone. This like machine zone. Mm-hmm. And so you can't get out of that to reflect yet.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't be able to reflect necessarily mm-hmm. until you get home or maybe even months after that. So we're
like on
still
the podcast.
Yeah, like on this podcast. Exactly. Have a little therapy session with Jimmy. It's all good.
Maybe you need to come on one of these trips and then every 7 days you show up, we have a little therapy session and then we continue on down the road.
I like the idea of that. That way I could be like, all right, you guys, I'll see you at the next stop. And I'm going to go around this way at a different pace.
Perfect.
Right.
Yeah.
It's tricky to be able to, I guess, be a leader sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, like I was watching the Barbie movie randomly.
Sweet. Seen it.
Yeah. And this whole thing when the mom character, I can't remember her name, I'm sorry. She was doing this speech about how you want to be liked, but also do a really good job, but also look pretty, but also be a strong leader and be assertive and all these things.
But not too assertive.
Right. So I felt like that's how I felt as a navigator on this trip. I was like, I want you to like me, but I also, you guys need to like, we have to leave now.
You know? Yeah. So it sounds like it stretched you a little bit. It did. It was a growth experience that way.
Yep. Yeah. I'm looking forward to eventually, hopefully being a part of another big EXO trip in the future where I can really take what, and I know you feel the same way, Richard, like what we learned and grow from it and improve in the next, on the next adventure.
Yeah. I definitely need to learn more about leadership. I need to read a book or two. I need to take a course. It was something that I was not, I don't know. I think my age snuck up on me. So all of a sudden when I spend time with 12 to 20 year olds, I'm like, oh, I'm an adult. I need to like learn how to converse with you as both like an adult and sort of a friend, but also, you know, as I guess not as a boss, but as a mentor and that sort of thing. And I was not really prepared for that on this trip. I did turn 40 on that trip. So maybe it all came all at once. I was like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Changes.
That's a lot to have happen like, on the trip with everything else. And then have the kids and, you know, that big team and a guy like Peter Van Straelen, you know, who you were mentoring, which I'm curious, Lee and I both wanted to know more about that. Like, cause it seems to me you were mentoring him in adventure filmmaking, you might say, cinematography, videography.
Yeah. And to be honest, like Pete does this all the time with his own family.
They're
constantly filming. And then we've been constantly filming as well for the creator series and some other things. So more often than not, we were working. It was more like we were just working together because he has so much to teach me. I have a lot to teach him. And it worked pretty well. Pete is fantastic because he has so much energy and he is just like constantly go, 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 go. And I mostly felt like I had to slow him down. I'm like, dude, it's day three. Mm. Just slow down the pace just a little bit because we have 57 more days of this. And so at first I was like, oh, am I like not pushing it far enough? I'm like, and at some time, eventually I realized like, okay, no, I know what it feels like after 2 months of this.
Yeah.
And it's rough. So I think maybe if anything, I help slow him down a bit.
Just help him with pacing.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, he was wild, man. Like we were talking earlier, like I just kept seeing pictures of footage of him and he looked like he walked out of the jungle or something. Yeah. He was just full of dust and a bandana and
he looks, you
know,
the part.
Just looking the part. Yeah, yeah. It's like, I don't know if he's coming home. I think he's gone feral. He's just going to wander off into the bush somewhere.
Yeah.
So it looked like he was really having fun.
For sure.
Yeah. With learning everything he was learning and
Kind
of coming into his own is what I heard from his parents, actually.
Nice. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, it was a huge change from even the Nordic series when he was just itching to get his hand on a camera there. And even though he's done it for his family at that point a bit, I think at second half of the Nordic trip when we got into Iceland, he was filming a lot and
really enjoying it.
Really enjoying it and really pushing. And so when it came to this trip, when Clay and I were chatting about another camera person, it was like, oh, I'd give Pete a shot because, he's got the energy, he's got the effort and really wants to push. So it was great.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
This is an ad, but it's a good ad. The ad is to announce that we've linked up with the Mobile One team, who have joined us in celebration of their 50th anniversary. And what better way to celebrate a 50th anniversary than supporting 5 content creators to each produce 5 films on ExOverland Network? The Mobile One brand has a simple mission to encourage the love of driving. So, over the course of this year, you're going to see some of your favorite overlanding content creators doing what they love out on the unpaved roads of America in the ExOverland Network Creator Series, driven by Mobile One. Because we're driving, and it's all about the love of driving. Well, you get it. The first episodes in this series are called Gone Cookin', produced by content creators Gone Dirtin', and will be available exclusively on the Mobile One YouTube channel, so go subscribe and hit the bell so you're in the loop. You won't want to miss the other 4 series and exclusive bonus behind-the-scenes content as well. This is a long ad, but 50th anniversaries call for big news. So join us on the long road ahead as we celebrate the love of driving in honor of the 50th anniversary of the Mobile One brand, out on the open road.
Leah, I'm feeling like that's kind of segueing into something, but do you have something front of mind and that you're wanting to ask?
Yeah, I was soon on a question there. You know, I think a lot of people, a lot of people who watch ExoVerlian content are watching it from the perspective of gaining knowledge for filming their own adventures. You know, and they're talking about different types of cameras, different types of drones, different types of footage, whatever. You know, Richard, what would you tell someone who is like trying to, you know, watching us create the, you guys are professionals, but they're looking at you for direction and inspiration. Like, what's the perspective that you would give someone who's trying to create that for themselves?
Like, I think the biggest thing is that they tell their story or tell a story. That's very exciting because.
And how do you do that when you like don't have a story in place? Like, I think about the most of us who travel not for the sake of work, right? Like, that's the difference between ExoVerlian expeditions. You go with a plan in mind and a story in mind, kind of. For those of us who are overlanding more as of, I hate to use the word vacation, but like that's what we're doing for as a hobby or for fun. The story might not be there.
Yeah,
just
and
yet.
I think, sorry to cut you off. I think that we don't always know what the story is either. And the amount of time that Clay spends in a journal and charting what we've done and trying to piece that story together, sometimes it doesn't happen until months after we get back. And then it becomes very clear once you see the footage. But at times we try to go into a scene with a story or an episode with a story just to like have a little bit of framework to work within.
Could be an internal story.
And it could be like, I'll use the example. I was kind of writing some notes about, I'm gonna go a little segue for a sec, for our creator series episode 6 of Morocco. And I keep coming back to the fact that like we spent a little bit of time in some Islamic countries like with Jordan and Saudi Arabia, but we've never done it with our own vehicle. And I felt like we've never been able to take the time to just feel it. And I think that's what we'll dive into our Moroccan episode with. It's just like, I just want to spend time with some people, really dive into the food culture and just experience the things that we haven't been able to in the past. And at the very least, we'll start off with, you know, that theme and see what happens.
And we work very differently. I think both well, like I'll take inspiration from the external. So I'll read as much as I can about Morocco. I'll read books that are fiction that are written in Morocco as much as I can. This might be after we've left. This might be while we're there. I'll read articles about it, short stories about it, watch movies, listen to music, and see what kind of themes pop out. It could be anything.
Yeah.
And
we use
concepts.
So the concept, like for, again, we'll go with the creator series. I'm sorry to keep on talking.
I want you to know it's fine. Like, I mean, we can plug that a little bit and talk about
it. It's just an example. I know it's close to my heart now.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and it's coming.
Episode 2 is in Malta. So it's little tiny country in the Mediterranean, but that's where my grandparents emigrated from. And we decided to go there while our truck was shipping across the Atlantic. And that episode was just about finding a little bit more about my grandparents. So we hunt for the house they lived in before they emigrated to immigrated into Canada. I learned how to make pastitsis, these little pastry things that I never learned from my grandma. I never had the time to learn from my grandma before she died. And we were able to piece together, like, kind of unknowingly in the beginning, but the whole thing about being in Malta was just like me learning about my heritage. And so it's very easy to just look inward and tell your own story if you're okay with kind of being a little bit vulnerable, I think. There are lots of ways to think about it. And I am really learning a lot because I didn't know a lot to start with. So,
but I think it's also tricky sometimes because you have an idea about the trip, no matter whether it's for recreation or if it's full-time travel or if it's an expedition, you don't really know what it's like until you're there. And so holding it kind of loose and then going, these things will start clicking. Like you'll be like, okay, cool. I know what it's really like here, and I know what it's on the road wherever you are, and maybe some inspiration will strike while you're out on the road.
Mm-hmm. And it's okay to start with a concept that you see from somebody else, and you kind of use that as an inspiration. And no matter what you do, it is not going to be exactly the same. So it's always a good place mm-hmm. to start. Like, look at a video you really like and be like, okay, I like those shots. I like how he's narrating. Mm.
Do you like it?
Try to figure out why you like it and then emulate it. And maybe it turns out great. Maybe it doesn't. And then you'll certainly learn something along the way of like where you can continue on down the path.
Wow. So many thoughts popping into my mind, Leah, like just as potential responses to everything Richard Nash just said. Mm-hmm. You know, so like one thing that comes to mind to me right away is how overlanding is often, I think more so nowadays, it's become synonymous with adventure mm-hmm. and this idea of adventure, which is great. It is, right? I think by the nature of what you're doing, you're going to have plenty of adventure. Mm-hmm. But with your creator series, to hear Richard talk about overlanding was a vehicle, no pun intended, to explore your family history. And to go to the places, you know, that you wanted to visit to connect more with your family. And like that's a whole nother reason to overland, mm-hmm. right? Than just we need to find an adventure. It's like there's so many cool things you can explore and learn and do. I kind of get a feeling like your creator series is going to be leaning into some of those areas of overlanding.
Got to lean a little harder. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I've been reading more about overland trips with different like themes or different, the reason why people are doing them.
Yes.
Journalism, like journalists in the past, like war correspondents, but they happened to drive Land Rovers across the Sahara. And the reason why they were driving was because they were documenting war. So like George Roger is an example of that from the UK. Or we were reading about this Iran expedition, this US couple did this trip to Iran to do sampling. Like there were biologists, and so they're taking a vehicle, but the whole purpose behind this trip was science and obtaining these
samples
specimens
of mammals.
So that's cool. I love that kind of different perspective of why people are doing it.
Engaging in overland travel.
And Clay's talked about this before, and it really like is in line with this, where all these skills you learn as an overlander, you just take and then you can apply it to like collecting samples of mammals or fly fishing or finding out about your family history. And so all of the overlandy things become second nature to all of the rest of the skills that you're going to learn and all of the other knowledge you're going to gain. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally agreed. Overlanding is just, it just opens up so many doors to enjoy even more too, some of the things you already enjoy. And Ashley, we're definitely going to have that podcast where we talk about overlanding journalism. I'm really excited. We're going to deep dive into that one. But here we're talking about Africa primarily. So Leah, would you like to propose the next question or should I?
Next question, Ashley, ready? How do you stay looking so dang cute all the time? In every photo that I see you, the hair and the things, you look...
appreciate that compliment. It does not feel like it at the time.
And I'm just envisioning all the dust that we just talked about too. Like I would be in a hat with, it'd be terrible. And that's not what I got from what I've seen. Tell us your secret.
I think part of my secret, my grandma, oh my gosh. So she unfortunately passed away last year at 99 and a half. Wow. So she had a really amazing life. Oh, but I posted on Instagram about her and Facebook, and I had so many comments from family members or people that knew her. And they were like, man, I just remember her looking always so well put together. You know, she always had like matching lipstick and little clip-on earrings and stuff. So I'm like, well, hopefully maybe I got a little bit from her, just whatever. But I'm always the last one out of the tent, to be honest. Like I'm always like everybody, we need to leave, and I'm always on time, but I'm always the last one out of the tent. Am I not? What?
I don't think so.
Really?
Yeah, I think you just think you're the you're well out of our tent. You're the last one, but.
Anyways, I'm not really answering the question, but I still do my makeup and I try to do my hair as often as I can. I think a hat goes a long way. Like I wore a hat a lot in Africa.
But we don't have to be roughing it.
Like you
can feel as good as you want to feel, I guess, by doing whatever you want to do.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. If you feel more comfortable and you feel like your best self by bringing, you know, your big pack of makeup, or maybe it doesn't have to be makeup. It could be like a shirt or just anything you like. It could be a lip gloss, mm-hmm. or your favorite earrings, or even if you're, you know, a guy, like, I don't know about you, maybe you have your favorite hat or toque or shirt, mm-hmm. or something that makes you feel like your best, then that really helps. You don't have to go into it feeling like you have to be roughing it.
Yeah.
I like even if you are,
yeah,
you know,
I like to put on a hat or a toque it's, first of all, it's easy, and my hair is always a mess from what hair I have left. So that way I don't have to see my receding hairline win.
Oh, no.
And then I try not to look in a mirror. Those are my things. Put on a hat and don't look in a mirror, and I feel good. I don't know if that's great for... I think I have to talk to the therapist.
I love it. I love this kind of chat about feeling good. I've got a podcast with Scott Brady tomorrow.
Nice.
And we're going to talk about thriving, you know, and just ways of thriving while traveling and adventure traveling, and kind of use Africa, his African experiences, as a way to reach that for people, whether they're going out for the weekend or they're going across Africa, right? Yeah. But I hear you guys like talking about what clicks with you, and it kind of speaks to integrity for me, and just keep like remaining true to yourself while you're on these trips, mm-hmm. and looking at whatever that takes, and then right.
Totally. I think too, you know, bring stuff from home that makes you feel good or makes you feel comfortable or happy if you want to. Like some examples could be like bedding, like from home. So it feels like you have a piece of home with you.
Mm. Rochelle takes her full size pillow and she loves it.
Yeah. And recently, I bought a water glass because I was just like, I'm so over full-time camper living and drinking out of my Nalgene 24/7 or drinking out of metal cups all the time. Yeah. So I switched to glass, which is not really practical, but it just felt like we needed that sense of home in the camper.
It's still living.
Yeah.
It's in one piece.
Yep.
I'm going to back up what you're saying, Ashley, and that is a coffee lover. I have a ceramic mug that's in my camper.
Same.
I pad it up, but I'm like, coffee just tastes so much better, mm-hmm. out of that mug, you know, and it's hand potted and everything. And I guess the stainless steel coffee mugs can't do it.
Mm-mm.
And I know you guys love your coffee. So
yeah, same. We bought our mugs in Africa, in South Africa.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah. It's been great.
So speaking of Africa, all right, Leah, are you ready? I'm going to jump in with a question. Like from our brainstorm sesh. Africa. What is it really like? The roads, the people, the animals, you know, like most of us just see Africa on documentaries. We see it in overly dramatized Hollywood movies. You all were there for what, 2 months, something mm-hmm. like that? Southern Africa we're talking about here. So, but still, right? What is it like? What, how did it stack up to what you thought it was going to be, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I felt it was a lot easier to travel than I was expecting. I thought the roads were way worse than I was expecting in terms of corrugation. We were there in the winter, so there were no mosquitoes and no worries of malaria. Which I was very happy about and relieved about.
I think a lot of the team members were surprised because the temperatures were cooler.
Yeah. It snowed in Johannesburg. When we were there, not when we were in Johannesburg, but yeah,
that was a shock to me. Like listening, just getting feedback, I was like, "What? Everyone's wearing puffies, and you know, this is Africa. I thought you just walked around in khaki shorts." And
No.
Nope.
And then we didn't see a lot of animals just day to day. I think, but when we
except for Botswana,
mm-hmm. but when we went looking for them or we went to the specific areas, it was mind-bending just how many of so many different varieties of species were everywhere. Just
oh, and
crazy.
In the morning, because it was cooler, there weren't as many animals out. So it was always like the advice is to go out in the morning and that's when all the animals will be out. But actually the temperatures were cooler because it was winter. So we didn't really, that was not the best time for us to go. It was... Yeah, later in the afternoon or later in the morning when the temperatures had
warmed up a bit.
Yeah.
You know, that whole African winter bit, you know, I think for a lot of people will be a revelation, like, hey, you know, there's winter in Southern Africa. And when you go there, like, be prepared for that. Because of, you know, the stereotypes, right? We typically, all the movies, you don't see people wearing puffy jackets and being cold.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's definitely a change. And as far as the animals go, did you guys have any scary moments? So, you know, with elephants or rhinoceros or...
I don't think so. We had wild dogs run through camp in Kwai, one of our campsites, and it was amazing. And they could care less that we were there. They were
on
hunting
a mission.
So, but I think that was it. I don't really. We didn't really have a lot. There were
once
a few
or
animal,
twice
or a few
there were
elephants.
Some elephants that were a little closer than I would have liked, but otherwise seemed okay.
Yeah. It was good.
Was it chill enough that you, like, I'm speaking as a motorcyclist, you know, would you feel comfortable on a motorcycle?
I don't think so.
People do it, though. Yeah. People definitely do it.
Honestly. Yeah. We got a podcast coming out.
Joe Fleming.
Yeah, he's all over the place on his bike. Yeah.
So he would, like, probably have a different answer than we would. Yeah.
He's kind of a crazy dude. So.
Yeah. That'll be a fun one.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, were you in lion habitat ever? Like where you might see pug marks? Mm-hmm. Are you just new? Like, it's possible a lion is somewhere outside of camp?
Yeah, we saw paw prints. We didn't see any lions this time, but...
We did see leopards, but those are the only cats that we saw, I think. Yeah, both after a kill, so...
We're also moving quickly. We're hardly ever at one camp for more than a night.
Okay.
So if you want to see more wildlife... You have to kind of slow down a little bit, but plenty of elephants. Yeah.
Yep.
Elephants everywhere.
Yeah. I definitely could see that from the footage. A lot of elephants.
Lots of hippos.
Yep.
Now, you guys went out on a river at some point. I remember seeing the big crocs.
Oh, the Chobe River. Yeah. That was very beautiful.
Yeah. There was one shot on the Chobe River that this was only a week into our trip, I think, but it was a long lens, slow-mo shot of a elephant reaching down into the river and pulling out, I think they're like lily pads, and he pulls them out, eats the roots, and spits out the leaves because they're disgusting, gross. And so he's just like constantly just pulling them up, eating the roots, hucking them out. And I had seen this happen in a National Geographic documentary before we had shown up about the Okavango Delta. And I was in the middle of shooting it off of a boat that. A tour boat that we were on, and watching it happen through the lens, I'm like, wait, what is happening? Am I a nature videographer now? Am I making a documentary? It just was mind blowing. And after that, I was like, check, done.
Yeah,
it was so good.
It was like kind of a dream come true.
It was
videography, like you were like Nat Geo.
I didn't know it was on the bucket list, but I sure checked it off. So. It was good.
I was gonna ask Richard Lee, like, what's the most memorable thing he filmed while he was there?
And that's it.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Yeah, that elephant.
That's the one.
I remember one swimming across the river.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was like, wow.
That was amazing.
That's quite a sight.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised that the baby elephant made it. He was underwater a long time. Yeah, he's got his little snorkel though, at least, so he can make his way across.
Yeah.
So similar questions, I'm thinking like the behind the scenes here, like what, in terms of it, you were food, fuel, all those things, what's shopping like? What is the meal planning like?
Yeah. So we really embraced the braai culture, and braai is essentially barbecuing. So there was a lot of meat. Open fire over coal.
Okay.
So we did that a lot. We picked up some braai, like, what are those?
Like grates?
I don't know the right barbecuing word. Things.
You put over a fire, like build a fire and get the coals. And
exactly.
Yeah, okay. So we really embraced that. Rochelle's great at cooking meat. I'm better at veggies, in my personal opinion. So she did an amazing job of, we would do a braai feast a lot. The only thing with braai is it takes a long time. So we were often in camp late-ish, sort of. And then cooking the meat over the grill would take a really long time, but it was always worth it. And we also had the staple, I guess, that I always seem to make the salad with the tomatoes and the onions and the peppers, because I feel like we can find those almost everywhere. We had pasta.
Every once in a while, we dip into our Kraft dinner, mac and cheese.
supplies.
That came from the U.S.
Yep. We had fried rice a few times, and that went over really well. Soup, and Pete made some squash over butternut squash over the fire. That was delicious. We were better about snacks, like proper snacks this time, sort of.
And I think
after
the boys like survived on Snickers, Red Bull, and Coca-Cola.
Sounds like teenage boys. Right.
Yeah.
The Coke tastes like Mexican Coke, so it's great.
To be fair, they really liked the eggs, the hard-boiled eggs, and we cut up a whole Ziploc bag of oranges, and those went over really well, too.
I noticed Dr. John was making gin and tonics to, you know, keep the malaria at bay. And I was like, oh, that's perfect.
Yeah,
we got to do this, you know?
He was a big help.
They were strong.
Yeah, we did see at least one mosquito. So we're like, okay, full court press on these gin and tonics.
Yeah.
Drunk right now.
Better say
yeah. Exactly. Sorry.
Exactly.
What kind of meats like are customary over there? Is it beef or hogs or, you know, stuff that's raised locally, I guess?
Yeah,
for sure. Beef, chicken. We had a lot of chicken. Did we have lamb?
Yep, we did.
Yeah, beef, chicken, lamb.
I feel like those were the.
I don't know that we had that much pork. Mm-mm. Not really.
But lots of beef.
Mm-hmm.
Lots. Was it good?
It was delicious.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Cool.
Getting hungry now.
Well, now I'm wondering too, Leah, because I know I'm sitting across the table from coffee lovers who are as passionate as I am about Java. So how did you manage that? In Southern Africa, was it good? Did you find beans?
Good question.
Cities.
Yeah.
I think we mostly just stocked up whenever we were in a city with like a proper coffee shop or roaster.
You guys bought beans at the grocery store usually.
Yeah, we always had a supply of backup ground beans from the
in the Stanley press.
We had a Brew Trek French press.
Oh, the Brew Trek French press. Yes. Yeah, those are sweet.
Exactly. So, that was good. I think I always had a little bit of instant coffee kicking around just in case.
Oh, yeah. Emergency rations. Yeah. Got to have those.
Exactly.
I think the best coffee we probably had was in Cape Town.
Cape Town had some great coffee. And then Johannesburg.
Vindhook had one good place. Yeah.
Yeah. So whenever we were in a city, we had opportunity to get the good stuff. And then that would last us for quite a while.
That's a good answer to your question, actually, about what is Africa like? When we got to Johannesburg, I didn't realize that it was such a metropolis. We went to this big mall to pick up a few things that we needed.
I think puffy jackets for the boys is what we were grabbing.
I just didn't know, I guess, enough about that region, but it was like quite a fancy mall.
You know, it makes me think as far as like, filmmaking. Right. And whether we're filming like overland material, YouTubers, or it's actual like big Hollywood productions, in terms of a region, how much that gets left out, sometimes because of necessity, you're just trying to tell a story, so you don't want extraneous stuff. Other times for, all kinds of reasons. But like that caught my attention too, Leah, when she was mentioning like the bigger cities. When we were in a city, we'd find the coffee. And I'm like, what city, Africa, like that didn't compute because of everything I've seen on TV, right? So like, what is that like, just kind of as filmmakers in general, as far as like what you leave out, what you keep in, and what people see and don't see maybe?
I think this has probably changed a lot from when EXO filmed South America to now. Clay has a very good idea of what's going to make the story and what's not going to make the story. So I think in South America, there was like a lot of footage filmed that they just didn't know. They didn't know what they needed because it's like one of the first big trips.
Oh, yeah.
And
for
then
sure.
Slowly as more and more come along, you realize how much hits the cutting room floor. Mm. So I think we're getting more and more efficient as time goes on. So knowing what, again, like if you have an idea of what the story is in the beginning and we get there and we're like, okay, like Johannesburg is really cool. There's a lot of stuff that we could talk about here and that we could dive into the city. We can go to Soweto. We can go to Mandela's house. We can do all this stuff.
Mandela's house. Oh, wow.
Which, and I think the boys went, right?
Yep.
With Dr. John. They filmed it. I don't know if it's going to make the show or not, but we could just sit in Johannesburg and film episode after episode after episode.
Just there.
Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the story that we went there to tell. We went, the plan was to get out of the city. So, there's some definitely behind the scenes that happens before the trip and after the trip, during the trip, you're seeing almost everything, almost everything that happens. So don't worry, you're not being left out.
Cool, cool. That's exciting. I'm all the more excited.
Yeah.
No, I was just thinking about, like, generally speaking, when you talk about overlanding, it's synonymous with getting away from the cities, right? Like, you're just trying to, that's not true for everybody, but it's a general rule of thumb. But the city is where you see the culture, or certain parts. I hate blanket statements, and I feel like I'm saying a lot of them right now, but you know what I mean? Like, it's a little bit of both. So it's important to document it all. It's still part of the story. Sorry, I have a terrible.
You know, I'm thinking of the, so they were mentioning the kids like drinking soft drinks and, you know, eating M&Ms or whatever it was. And then, you know, you were talking about that earlier, Richard, as far as like, you know, you turn 40 on this trip and there are all these things going on. And Leah and I, when we were brainstorming, we are both so impressed at you two as a couple, like really all the couples in the Creator series. Mm. It's just amazing how you work together and you're working together, you're playing together, you're doing it all out of this small environment. And I guess that's like where my question's going, Leah, is knowing how you two work together as a couple, and you probably have that pretty well dialed. What happens when that intersects with ex-Oberland and not just like Clay and Rochelle this time, but the whole family? And I mean, the social dynamics of this expedition were big, seems like, mm-hmm. to me. So what was that like, and how did you guys manage that?
I'll preface this with or by saying that currently we're spending this week or two in Bozeman in the upstairs of their house by all the boys in their room where we always stay. So we've just got this like a little attic room. So we're yes, close friends. We're in their house.
Like family.
We are like family. It feels like a home, one of a few homes that we have. And it's always so nice to come back here and feels very comfortable. So having a great relationship to start made the rest of it pretty easy, which is great.
Great relationship with the Crofts.
Yeah.
So it's probably exciting to have the boys along and like see them out there growing and learning things.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It was cool to see them grow, you know, from when we first got there to when we left, and you could see the changes. I mean, even Ryder, you could see the changes in terms of he probably grew like an inch while we were there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was cool.
Yeah. It's funny in the footage, or in the photos, at least when I was looking, when I'm scrolling through, I'm like, okay, he's like a boy here, but he's a man here. And this is only 2 months away. Like, how did that happen? Mm-hmm. And yeah, like mentally and physically, emotionally, everybody's growing. It's pretty fun to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Stretch for everybody.
Yeah.
And the whole Croft family.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say socially was the greatest challenge for the group as a whole that you saw?
I think the hardest thing about any of these trips, and this one was no exception, is that we all go there and we all have our job that we want to do to the best of our ability. And there's always give and take with every other person in on the trip. You know, Clay's trying to tell a great story. So we need to get to places to tell a story, but we also have to film heavily in those places to make it interesting and to get the point across. Ashley's like, we have to go here, 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 and here, not only for today, but for the next 7 days, because we have to get to this point in a week to go pick up or drop off somebody or to go and hop on a tour or whatever it is. So Ashley's got all these things she's thinking about. All the while, I'm like, okay, why are we on this like garbage road when we could have bypassed it? We're not filming it. All the cameras are falling apart, but I also have to like film this because it's interesting now. And we're all trying to make the best decisions possible for ourselves. And then also the overlap with everybody else. So I think there were definitely times when we all kind of like fade off into our own world when we're just trying to do our best job possible, and then realizing that we have to come back into the team and be like, okay, this is a team effort, and it's okay to be like to be open and vulnerable with the team and say, okay, like I'm upset because I'm trying to do this job to the best of my ability, but I can't because of this. And the thing is, it's like, oh, usually at that point everybody gathers around, they're like, okay, well, don't worry about it. If it's important, we're gonna like work towards it together. Or if it's not important, we're like, all right, don't worry about that. We're going to move on. Like, we're going to worry about this other big important thing that you either knew about or you didn't know about. So I think for all of us, just like making sure that we were communicating constantly wasn't always easy, but was something that we learned to do after, you know, after a few, after a week, probably.
That's tricky too, because we were on such a tight timeline. And I know that 2 months sounds like a lot, because it is really, but for what we were doing, and then the time constraints that developed, those all put pressure on everybody's roles. The sense of we need to get to where we need to go, and everything seems like a huge rush. And everybody's role was affected by that. And so it's like, how are you all reacting to that? But that was one overarching factor that definitely touched everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It made everybody's job harder, so we kind of had to come together.
Yeah. And I feel like this was the first trip that we went on where all of us had some sort of personal or family thing happening back home that also took some attention away from the trip. Because usually we could just dive in 1,000%. And we're like, we're here, blinders on, let's do our job. We're our own family here.
Mm-hmm. But things continue to go on back home while you're gone. And so, yeah, I think every single one of us had something crop up from home that we needed to attend to.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there was a lot going on this trip.
There's a lot going on. And, you know, Leah, it's interesting because, like, hearing you two describe the challenges, it reminds me of just working with X Overland overall as a brand.
That's exactly what I was going to say next. And that's part of why I love it so much, right? Like, I mean, Jimmy and I don't exactly get to go on these excursions, but so much of what you're saying is parallel to what we do for working with them. And they, and the Crofts have this way of bringing you in and being part of, like, you are part of the family when you are part of the team. And it makes it like your problem is their problem and our problem is their, is everyone's problem. But then also, like, everyone helps bring perspective. So you're never like, yeah, it's a really great team to be a part of, even if you're not traveling with them.
Yeah, it's like we got all these individual creators who are driven, you know, to do things as well as they possibly can. But the what happens, you get in your own little world, right? And then the other things, it's like, oh, well, that's just getting in the way. And at some point, everyone has to come together, express their frustrations, and yet still be part of the team,
yeah,
right? And then we sort things out. So it's kind of really wild to see how that's parallel when this whole show is on the road,
yeah,
you know, and you're out there doing the expedition.
Yeah, it was good. Really good learning experience. Cause for myself now I'm like, okay, even when I need to say something, I usually just hold to myself maybe a little bit too long. Now I know, okay, think about it, digest it. Do I need to comment about it? Do I need to tell somebody? Yes. Discuss. So we'll
sounds
see
healthy. Sounds yeah. challenging.
I haven't actually put healthy. This. I haven't put this into effect yet.
It's like a thing we've learned recently is to speak up, right, and say the things.
Yeah, 100%. And just, you know that we're all working together and trying to achieve an overarching goal. So.
And we can do the same thing with our relationship.
Yeah, yeah. So you can learn things and apply. Yeah, it's wild. It's wild, all the social dynamics.
We'll talk to you in a year, and I'll let you know how well it's working out.
Well, I want to hear a little more about the Creator Series, just so we can leave with that, maybe, Leah, and just hear, you know, kind of what you guys have in mind, what you're working on.
Yeah.
So we are currently filming or finishing up episode 5, and our series is kind of an episodic travel series about what we're doing, our travels. So we shipped our 2008 Tundra from the US. So we drove down to Canada, down to Texas, shipped it from there to UK, into England, drove up, spent a lot of time in England and up into Scotland, then back down into Spain. And now as we're heading to Northern Africa, we'll be there for a bit and then head east.
Eventually.
Somewhere from there. And we've been separating each of our episodes more or less into a country, just trying to have a nice bookend of like border to border. So we can kind of dive deep into a little bit what we're doing, culture, food, just trying to learn as much as we can while we're there, and share that with everybody else, all while seeing different landscapes, and whether that's via truck or by foot, trying to get out and hike a lot.
Yeah, I remember that about you too. You love to like have those activities outside of the vehicle-based travel itself. Yeah.
So, and kind of sharing the things that are surprising us about each of these countries. Like, I didn't know there was a lot of off-roading in Spain. I didn't know there were beautiful white sand beaches in Scotland. And being able to share that with people has been pretty fun. I know they haven't seen it yet, but they will soon.
It also forces us to dive deeper. into these stories or into some aspect of what we're filming. So like, for example, in Malta, Richard was talking about the pastizzi, the little thing.
Like a pastry.
Pastry.
Yeah. Savory pasty. Pastry.
Savory pastry with filling. So it was really fun to dig into the history behind the dish and who typically makes it. And we went and took the cooking class with a local in Valletta. And then we went to like the most famous
pastizzeria
in what was the name of that place?
Rabat.
Medina.
Crystal Palace.
Yeah, there's a very famous place in Medina named the Crystal Palace. So we tracked down the owner. I don't want to give too much away about our series.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's pretty fun.
But it's fun to dive a little bit deeper and email people and be like, hey, do you want to chat about this thing that could potentially be really interesting to people? And just take it one step further and learn a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it's cool too, you know, for listeners to know, Ashley, that you're a journalist. Like you're doing overlanding journalism, like researching on that. And you write for Overland Journal extensively. And so does Richard. But I know you really lean on the journalistic side of things. So I see you bringing that to the creator series, right?
I hope so. That would be great.
That really gets me excited about it, Leah, because I love that kind of stuff, you know, the deep dive and the journalism around an area and the culture.
Yeah, it takes a lot of research to do effectively, but hopefully we'll do that justice. Well, you're mostly doing it and you will do it justice. But
we'll do it justice.
We will.
Yeah,
we've had a lot of time with Ashley, these guys, Leah. Do you have any final questions? Or?
Yeah, I have one question for Ashley. Something that I struggle with myself is doing the research. It's just something I've struggled with. You mentioned multiple times, like you read the books, particularly the nonfiction or fiction books about, I think you said fiction books about the place that you're going and things like that. And I'd like to know, like for Africa, going back to that, like what were the top couple of things that you did to prepare and that you read, listened to?
Oh yeah, I love it. So for the Africa trip, I would say that I leaned pretty heavily on people that live there already. So you'll see a couple of those folks in the series, because they had knowledge on the ground. And also people that I knew that were friends of mine or colleagues that have been there. And, so they really helped me a lot.
But been there overland traveling, especially.
Yes. Been there overland traveling, 'cause that's a different dynamic. And I had a couple of really good blogs that were recommended to me. One was Ostrich Trails, I believe, ostrichtrails.com. And they did a fantastic job of setting out all of the parks in Botswana and details on how much camping costs, recommendations on tracks, where to see animals, which campsite is the best. It was like a whole lot of work that's been done, and it was very, very helpful. I read Cry of the Kalahari after we got back. I don't know if anybody's heard of that book, but that was really cool. I wish I read it ahead of time, but I think I got more out of it reading it afterwards. Two biologists from the States went to the Kalahari, I think it was in the 70s, don't quote me on that, and set up a camp in the middle of literally nowhere in the Kalahari to study the animals there. And it was just their story of survival and trying to get funding to expand the knowledge of all these different animals in that area. So what they were willing to sacrifice and do in order to stay there and research the animals was an incredible, incredible story. So highly recommend that one. Hopefully that sort of answered your question.
Yeah, it does. And it's inspiring me to pick up a book more often before I head out somewhere.
Yeah, I think like audiobooks, some people find those really helpful. I think we do too, or podcasts. So, I'm always like listening to, like for Iceland, before we left, I tracked down a really good podcast and I can't remember the name of it now, but I would just, if I went for a walk or something every day, would listen to a podcast about, you know, 10 tips on Iceland or whatever it was. It was really beneficial going in because I felt like I knew a little bit more about what was going on. Guidebooks as well.
And
like
I would say that
typical guidebooks. We're doing it now for Morocco, so it's good timing.
I would say that we always watch we'll watch an episode of Anthony Bourdain if he's been to one of these places. Great idea. Mm-hmm. Food. Yeah. And Mark Wiens mm-hmm. on YouTube. He always dives deep into the food culture and gives us some things to look forward to.
It can be an overwhelming process because sometimes we're looking on iOverlander or Park for Night. And I'm also, you know, we have our Lonely Planet book, which I love for the kind of end of those books because it gives you a breakdown of the history and food, but like all in a nice, concise way. Or if you're just looking to do hiking mm-hmm. or just looking to do ruins or whatever, it's really concise, which I like. And then balancing that with blogs or Instagram is like, there's so much information. It's almost too much now.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I feel what you're saying. It's like an overwhelming amount of resources sometimes, especially on places that are popular and, you know, yeah. they have a lot written about them. And it's like, God, where do I begin?
Exactly.
But I will definitely, like, listeners know that I will take extra time in the show notes to, you know, put links in there to whatever mm-hmm. you two found to prep for Africa or you found useful.
Great.
You know, so people can go there and maybe find some of those resources.
Yeah. I feel like if we had a home, mm-hmm. you would have a room that looks like a detective looking for a serial killer with all the post-it notes and the pictures and the yarn on the wall with all the pins. That's what your yes. map, that's what your travel planning
looks
like.
That's the inside
like.
Of
that's
your
what's
brain.
Happening in here.
Yeah. And just the different forms of information because everybody works differently. But I really love the map mm-hmm. layout on some of the mapping apps. And I love the icons. So you can put like an icon in for like restaurant and another yeah. icon for market or another one for
coffee
like
shop,
a
my favorite.
Yeah, a coffee shop. So yeah, it's fun. Fun stuff.
Yeah, I'm not laughing, like going back to the coffee thing. I could just hear Rochelle like with Ashley being lead navigators, like, we need to find some coffee. We, and it's got to be good. You know, let's get that the next city.
100%.
I have a couple more questions. I just can't resist asking you to just because of where you've been, right? Mm-hmm. And just to clarify, the countries in Southern Africa that you visited were what exactly?
So there was South Africa, Botswana, and Namibia.
Yeah, I think it's okay. important that Africa is a continent and not a country.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Yeah.
So I
not that you were saying that, but it's like a thing. You know, we think of Africa as a whole, but actually, it's very diverse with a lot of countries that are very, very, very different. And we just got a tiny little taste of mm-hmm. them.
That's great. We scratched the surface.
Well, yes. that leads me to you, my question, which was like, what in terms of the people in Africa, where you were, right? Southern Africa and these three different countries. What stood out to you the most about them? And what kind of like highlights do you have and memories mm-hmm. or things you learned?
I think everybody was very generous with their time.
I felt very welcomed.
Very welcomed.
They were yeah. very welcoming. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that as a whole, that those are the two things. Like whether there are people we just were introduced to and they were very welcoming or the people who helped plan a lot of the trip or were kind of like fixers on the ground. They spent a lot of time with us and
yep.
and didn't want anything in return. It was crazy. So yeah, struck up some good friendships.
Yeah.
That's cool. And like you were saying, Ashley, Africa, it's a continent full of countries and there's a lot of diversity in Africa in that way, right? That people kind of overlook. When you went through the three countries, did you see that per each country? Were they all a little bit different or kind of the same?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely, definitely different. Yep. Mm-hmm. Just in terms of even like grocery stores were different, just like it would be, you know, you go to Canada from the US and you would go to a different, you'd go to Canadian Tire maybe, which we don't have here. So it's the same in that sense. And then, yeah, different tribes, different cultural practices. So we saw the Himba in northern Namibia. And listeners will see all that on the Africa series. But their way of life is very, very different from, let's say, somebody living in Johannesburg. And so, they were really, really, we were fortunate enough to be able to chat with them about that and learn more about what they want the world to know about their culture and mm-hmm. preserving it, which was really special for us.
Yeah, for sure.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. My last question is just a simple one, but since you were a navigator, Ashley, I thought I'd ask you, wild camping. Did you guys do any of that? Is that available?
We did do some wild camping. Yeah. Not a lot, but I would say a handful of times probably. So the one thing that really stood out to me in that region of Africa was the excellent, excellent facilities, campgrounds. Cool. And they were really basic, but really comfortable. So they'd always, in the middle of nowhere, it would be like a little flush toilet in the campsite. And you're like, how does this even, what is happening? Like, so I don't understand this. It was incredible. Or you can talk about the shower facilities.
One of my favorite things is that usually I'm up late offloading all the data. Everybody's asleep. But in some of these campgrounds, they, like Ashley said, there'd be a well and a flush toilet. But right beside it, there'd be a shower. And the shower was heated by a donkey boiler. So essentially, there's like a little water. So cold water comes in, cold water goes out. But there's a reservoir of some sort, whether it's like a 45-gallon drum or a coil over top of a where you would light a fire. So you light a fire, it warms up this reservoir of water, and then you turn on the water, turn on the shower, and you have all of a sudden you have this hot shower that's just
it's open, like open air. Yeah.
So you're having this hot shower, you see the stars, you hear like whatever animals are in the distance, and it was always a treat. So like hours before you're stoking the fire, you're getting all ready, you know, you're planning ahead.
It was really special.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah. I would say we wild camped more outside of Botswana, which makes sense because the wildlife is just so saturated in that country. So you're taking a bit of a risk on, I guess, if you're just out wild camping. But Namibia, we definitely spent some time out there.
So it's possible you can do it. Mm-hmm. It's legal and you can camp like that some in those countries.
Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you just have to be safe about it, I guess. Yeah. You just have to make strategic decisions and know what you're in for. But yeah, it's definitely doable.
That's cool. Well, I'm glad I asked that question. Any final questions from you, Leah, or should we let these two go?
What's next after this? You're here in Bozeman for a week, and then what happens?
Yeah, so we're here until Monday, so 1 week away. Then we fly to Spain. We pick up our truck in Malaga. Hopefully it's still there. Fingers crossed.
Southern Spain.
Southern Spain. And then we'll be in Southern Spain probably for a couple of weeks, just going to do an oil change on the truck. Ashley's aunt and uncle are over there on a vacation, so we're going to scoot over and see them, which is always fun, meeting up with family on the other side of the world. And then we'll ferry down to Morocco.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
The last thing I would just say is that following you guys on Instagram is always a pleasure and super fun. And I would encourage everybody to
thank
do that.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And where do we find you guys? Let's just
Instagram
get that out
is
there.
What I update the most, even though I'll do a better job this year, I promise. But it's at desk to glory.
And mine is at desk_to_glory_ash.
Yeah. So if you have any questions, you can always just hit us on DMs. The DM there too. Yep.
Well, we'll get those bios and we'll get all that in the show notes too. And thank you both
for
taking time out of your crazy busy schedules and sitting down here at the hangar with us and podcasting for an hour. Yeah. So really
appreciate
it.
Thank you so much
it.
For having us. Yeah, it's always fun. Yeah.
All right. Looking forward to next time.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Leah.
Well, that was amazing. I absolutely love talking to Ashley about how she was able to help be a part of planning for Africa. I mean, like that was like, what a huge project. And it was inspiring me to use something like Onyx more often. I don't even know what platform she was using, but like being able to drop pins in places that you're curious about or interested in. And like thinking like, how often am I in the death scroll at night on the Instagram looking at cool places to visit and cool coffee shops and why not just take a second and plop a pin on Onyx? Right?
Oh, totally.
To remember like when you where think we're of going next time.
Making your death scroll incredibly productive and not a death scroll, but something more enlightening and helpful, like do some planning. And that's an app you can just jump on and fiddle around and plan things right before you know, as you're trying to fall asleep even. And she, you know, to the point, like Ashley, what that was to me, maybe the most fascinating part of the conversation was looking at Ashley's work as lead navigator on the expedition in Africa. Because I know you and I both talked about this, like how in the world, how do you do that? Like what apps do you use? What, you know, paper maps, tools, how do you navigate a team around three different countries in Southern Africa, finding wild camps, you know, that, so that part of the conversation, man, I loved it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, they both had such unique challenges. The rattling and the dust and the camera gear and, you know, a little bit of backstory for our listeners. After we recorded with Ashley and Richard, we then sat down with Clay and Rochelle to do another Africa recap. And we're talking about the conditions of the roads and the dust that was involved. And so Richard touched on that and how that affected the camera equipment and things. Then hearing it again from Clay, and it just really solidified like the challenges that are in this expedition are, you know, you think you're prepared, you think the vehicles are prepared, and then things just start to go awry.
Yeah, that is like overarching theme that I'm getting, you know, by proxy from the whole team is just, this was massively challenging to the model we have in place and to the degree that like we grew from this and expanded our understanding of how to do things in these kind of locations.
Right. I think all these trucks and everyone are coming back better prepared for the next expeditions.
Totally. That's how I feel. And I'm so excited. Like, this is part of a whole series of podcasts we're doing around the Africa APEX series. So we have Dr. John talking about medical preparation for Africa. We have Clay and Rochelle, of course, Richard and Ashley. There might be others who might be able to get, I'm not even going to release that name, but there's someone else we're trying to get on board for this. So lots of episodes around Africa. I can't wait. More conversations to come.
Yeah. And as that series launches soon, the podcast is going to be a great way for you to get insider information of what happened and the behind the scenes of, you know, the nitty gritty, the details.
So nitty gritty, man. Those are the words too.
The theme of this trip.
Richard was saying about dust. It sounded like there was definitely some nitty gritty. All right. Sure. Well, yeah.
As a reminder, you can go to xoverland.com/xo-podcast and leave us